Welcome to the Permaculture Pimp Cast with your host, the Permaculture Pimp Daddy and the Pasture Raised Pimp. Get your recommended daily allowance of permaculture, preparedness, and practical living. Tip a pimp. Stay alert, stay alive. Permaculture is my passion. Welcome to episode 133 of the Permaculture Pimp Cast, where PIMP stands for Permaculture is my passion. The only pimp cast on planet Earth where we discuss permaculture, preparedness, and practical living.
Tip a pimp.
That's right. My little buddy over there laying it all out. We'll cover that in a minute. As always, this episode brought to you by Hickory Ridge Soap from twooldcrowshomestead.com.
Turn that simp into a pimp.
Bam! Heaven's Harvest, y'all, 10% off with promo code PERMA. Get all your preparedness needs squared away over there, and judging by what's going on in the world, you might want to seriously think about it. Remember, promo code PERMA, P-E-R-M-A. And if you would like to tip a pimp, like the little boy said right there, you can check us out on the Fountain app. You can listen to all your podcasts over there. You can also drop a derivation of Bitcoin called Satoshi or Sats. You know what? I'm just going to call them SATs. So if you want to drop some SATs on some PIMPs, just go ahead and do it on the Fountain app. You can also leave comments over there. Pretty handy stuff. How you doing, son?
Pretty good. How are you?
Good, man. Farm news. So we're going to jump right into it. I know there's a lot going on these days, and especially this day. You've been gone this last weekend, so what was going on?
Yeah, I went out and did a consultation out on the coast of South Carolina. It was a consultation for a 1,600-acre plantation for some awesome people. I didn't ask permission to use their names, so I'll keep their names out of it. But they're the parents of the little boy saying, tip a pimp. I went out and did a consultation for them, and they wanted me to test three specific areas. One area was a dove field, which had conventional agriculture minus any Roundup. And they were growing corn and sunflower. And the whole point of the corn and sunflower was to attract doves. The second place was the garden. And the only thing done to it was increased organic matter. They added organic matter to it. And then the third place was pasture, where they had already, they've been grazing that area, I think, a little over a year. They've been grazing it properly with cows and sheep on a 180-day rotation. And the size paddocks are awesome. They're moving them every single day and all that. So I did the soil analysis. The area with the dove field, with the conventional agriculture, the soil was dirt. There were only root-feeding nematodes. That's pretty much all I found, which are bad guys. Just in the name, you can kind of tell. In the garden area, there was a huge improvement. Those two areas aren't too far from it, and they both had horses. This 1,600-acre plantation used to be polo fields, so they used to have horses galloping up and down these fields, so the compaction is insane. And both of these areas, I think, had that going on, but there was a massive improvement going on with the garden, and all they did was add organic matter. And then you look at the pasture, and then there's even an even bigger jump between the garden and the pasture because they have been grazing animals correctly on this area for a relatively short period of time. It was really cool to be able to see just the next to each other, the comparison between conventional agriculture and just farming done correctly.
Yeah, so moral to the story is all the lunatics out there saying we need to euthanize all the cows and get rid of them off this planet. Well, guess what? If you use them right, they can be the best thing on planet Earth. I mean, people like Alan Nation, Alan Savory, Joel Salatin, Greg Judy. I mean, the list is long. Jim Garrish, everybody out there will prove it. We prove it. You can fix anything. I mean, just look what Alan Savory did in just South Africa alone. I mean, Ian Mitchell Ennis. I mean, there are so many people out there that are proving these nut jobs absolutely wrong. And these are well-known people, but they never get the light of day. You'll never hear about those folks. So, you know, it just goes to show that just good management alone will change everything.
Yeah.
It'll make you way more prosperous. I mean, I was at Greg Judy's not long ago, and good night, man. You get out there and you look at this stuff, you see it with your own two eyes, and you realize, man, I'm walking on carpet here. I would have loved, I mean, I know the organic matter out there had to be fantastic. And I'm like, okay, this is the way it's supposed to be, where the cows were. Fantastic stuff. All right, well, your mom and I ended up, it was like an impromptu thing, went down to the farm where you live thing in South Carolina. I mean, the thing that we were going to do kind of fell through, so we ended up going down there, and it was always cool to hang out and see everybody. And you meet a lot of new people, and you meet some old ones, you meet some new ones, the whole nine yards. As always, when you go to these festivals, it's always something of a, you know, because you already, you don't have to worry about breaking the ice. If you go somewhere, you know, you're always fundamentally joined by at least the interest in farming, in small ag, whatever you want to call it, permaculture, it's all going to be under that roof. And so you meet so many wonderful people, and you walk away friends. So it was really cool to go there and to meet a lot of these folks. So yeah, that was a real joy. So a lot of other things going on. We could talk about farm news. Look, y'all, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this thing going on in Israel, but I do want to say this. All right, I'm going to try not to go too far off the deep end.
Are we calling this good news, or is
no?
This,
we didn't even like get into the good news.
In between farm news and
no, I'm just, well, this is in between, you know, talking about what festivals are going to come up. So we'll just go ahead and cover this. Look, all I know is this: they're saying this is one massive intelligence failure of Israel. Okay, well, let me tell you about three different borders. Okay, in this world, let's talk about the one between North and South Korea. Let's talk about the one at Guantanamo Bay, and let's talk about all the way around Israel. Okay, I've talked about it before. You can't make anything impenetrable unless you employ A, an obstacle, B, has to be surveilled, and C, it has to be covered by a threat. Nobody on planet Earth does that better than Israel. Nobody. And the official story is, you're telling me they basically did an Operation Market Gardens over there, flying in on hang gliders, you know, ramming down the fence, and you're telling me the IDF, they spent so much time there that they had to actually, they raped people on the spot. All I'm saying is, y'all, don't deny anything until it's officially proclaimed. There is so many holes in this story that do not make sense. And as far as the footage, where do you even know where that, how do you know where that even came from?
Aren't they supposed to have some insane, like, missile defense system?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Yeah, that was the first thing I thought of whenever, because the first thing I thought of was because I saw the photo. There was a photo of all these rockets going over into Israel.
Yeah.
And I was like, aren't they, like, I didn't see anything going the opposite direction, yeah, which seemed very odd.
The Iron Dome. I mean, and then they're showing all these gratuitous, it reminds me of World War One. The things done in World
War
One.
That's exactly what I thought.
Okay, babies on bayonets. Go look that up in World War One. That was what they pulled. And they're showing these women that were supposedly raped. I got news for you. You go in there and do an operation like this. Do you think the commandos doing this, if they're going to engage in such dastardly, diabolical behavior, do you think they're going to do it in the middle of the operation? Or do you think they're going to take them away and do that sort of thing? Like, I mean, the whole story from start to finish, there's not one aspect of it that makes any sense. And then, by the way, this giant intelligence failure, when's the last time you heard that? Oh,
yeah,
9/11.
Mossad had an intelligence failure.
Yeah, okay, we got probably the number one or number two intelligence gathering place on the planet. Definitely number one or number two.
Well, the connection to World War One that I made was a little bit different. The connection I made was, okay, going through the World War One museum, it largely seemed like trying to put it together as best as possible, that like one person had an issue with one person, and then these allies had to join in to defend this guy, and this ally had to defend. That's like, there was a domino effect. That's exactly, because there's this Brexit thing going on with all those countries. I'm wondering what Saudi Arabia and all them, or how they're going to react to like the United
Very
States defending
good point,
or Israel. So it just seems like that's the same.
So this could
and
be the Archduke Franz Ferdinand moment.
Yeah. And then this could be, yeah, like, go ahead and defend your friend. Like, you think all these people in that are elected right now, they all have dual citizenships. Their country just got attacked. You think they can't do anything?
And of course, you got that slime ball, Lindsey Graham. First thing to him, you could learn so much about who pays these people based on what was said. I'm like, first of all, you're telling me this is a massive intelligence failure? I'm not buying it. It is, look, folks, it's one giant lie. Last time we talked like this, you know, they basically put the sock in our mouths. I'm not worried about that sort of thing.
Yeah, I don't even know if we should try to upload this to YouTube.
No, I mean, it's not just YouTube. I mean, we talk about anything and then we get stifled when it has anything to do with Israel. But I'm just telling you this. Massive intelligence failure. You're telling me these people hang glided in. Basically, we're talking a D-Day invasion, and the number one intelligence, probably number one intelligence place on the planet, they dropped the ball that much. You're telling me the guys, there was no quick reaction force. There was a person, a friend of mine, who sent me a thing, and it was from a lady who used to work some of the command and control facilities over there, and she's speaking Yiddish or whatever it is. And she's saying, look, and I know this for a fact. There is not anything that crosses the border between North and South Korea that each side does not know about. There could be a cockroach and they know about it. And you're not going to tell me they staged all this stuff up. They have ground listening devices. I mean, everything you're being told, y'all, is being told to you by profligate liars. Everybody is lying to you right now. And like William said, his parallel with World War I and mine too, this could very well be the Archduke Franz Ferdinand moment. So you might want to think about that Heaven's Harvest.
At the risk of getting this podcast shut down, I wonder how many of them run or flee to Ukraine.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that. Well, that's a whole nother can of worms right there. Look, folks, I'm only saying all this. Look, I don't have anything against the Israeli people. I don't have anything against the American people. The one thing I do hate about both places is that I hate their government. And oh, by the way, this just conveniently happens right at the time when Netanyahu's on the ropes politically. And we need another subject changed, and we get all these people murdered over there. And I mean, that's if the numbers are even correct. How can you, there is nothing, I've said it before, you could have a friend that lied to you 1/100th to the extent that these governments do and these politicians, these pundits. And if they told you the sun rose in the east, you go out and check. There's not one thing they tell me that I believe. And then when I see the other pole cats out there, the typical people, and I'm like, huh, yeah, you're going on about this. And it's almost like it's acting. I'm watching them act. Yeah. People like Dan Bongino and some of the other. I've had this love-hate relationship with that dude because I'm like, he's like another version of Hannity.
Yeah.
But when I hear his, I said, let me tune in and just see what some of these typical pole cats. Let's see what they're talking about. This is a guy worked for the FBI, I mean, not the FBI, worked for as a New York City cop and then worked also in the Secret Service. Okay, you know, the same people who stood down to let Kennedy get murdered, which, right, by the way, he ain't never had a word to say about any of that, to my knowledge. And then he's going on about this stuff. He even admits that it was an, quote, intelligence failure. Okay, well, who would have done that? It had to be somebody in Israel that had the intelligence. Oh, this sounds like another false flag. This might very well, like William said, this could very well be. Remember, the official story of World War I is that you had all of these interlocking alliances. So next thing, and how it all got blamed on Germany, I'd like to know.
Well, and it's also getting to the point where everybody's like, all right, screw Ukraine. You know what I'm saying? Like in the United States, everybody's getting to the point where like, all right, we're having issues here. Let's focus here. Then you blow up Israel,
yep,
and then half the country's like, or 3/4 of the country turns Christian all of a sudden and wants to go defend Israel.
Yeah, but you know the crazy thing about this? Here's something that I stopped. I know we're going a little bit long on this, and I won't spend too much. I said I wasn't going to spend much time on it, but I got to cover this part. Okay, so name one American family that would openly say, yeah, I'm going to send my daughter or my son over there to go die in Ukraine. Not one.
Nope.
How many of them would openly and proudly send their firstborn to go get murdered in Israel?
Yep.
How many evangelicals? Yeah. How many evangelicals?
Put a bumper sticker on their car. Yes.
How many evangelicals would put their kid on the first thing smoking? Yeah, Israel's ready to fight right down to the very last American, like they always have been. And if you don't like what I'm saying, look, these are not programs that are ever going to get me popular or famous, but since when do I care about that? I mean, if you think Israel's so wonderful, they're just as pure as a driven snow, well, go watch the documentary, 3-part series, Sacrificing Liberty. And that's just one example, one of many examples I could find. Like I said, I love the Israeli people, not a big fan of the government, just like I'm not a fan of my government. And folks, I'm just telling you, All the people out there are going to line up and tell you lie after lie after lie. What they are telling you is an impossibility. And somebody who worked in the security industry like Dan Bongino ought to know.
Yeah.
And I am telling you, there is nothing that gets across that border between North and South Korea or at Guantanamo Bay or at Area 51 and definitely not Israel.
I didn't work in any kind of security, anything, and this didn't make sense to me.
Right off the bat, I'm like, come on,
permaculture consultation.
Okay, stop to think about this. Every single video that came out of Ukraine was always, how about this? It's all grainy. It's like, it looks grimy, grainy.
Filmed on like second generation GoPros
but,
or something.
Yeah, but now, all of a sudden, oh my goodness, you know, high def photos of all this stuff going on there. And it's play by play, nonstop, everybody in every media. Folks, they are setting you up. That's exactly what they're wanting to do. And they need it probably to change the subject on something or another. So watch what the other hand is doing.
Yeah.
Folks, reason why I'm saying this is a big deal, I know I'm covering it in the farm news, but I'm going to cover this because I know a lot of people are going to be afraid to. It doesn't pass, as a friend of mine just told me today, when I called him up and I said, hey, man, here's the situation, man. Am I seeing this a little bit wacky? And his words were, it doesn't pass the smell test.
Yeah.
And I just gave him kind of the cliff notes of it. And this is a person whose advice I would trust on such matters. And I reached out, you know, other people as well. And I'm like, there is not one person that has any degree of common sense that is buying this story, except for the people like Dan Bongino, the people like, I don't know about, you know, Laura Loomer. Okay, well, where'd she come from? Yeah. Where you can learn everything you need to know who's signing these people's checks based on the bellicose rhetoric you hear coming out of pretty much all these neocons coming out of the woodwork right now.
Yeah.
Folks, they are trying to send your kids off to war. And sadly, if you believe them, you'll put your kid on the first thing smoking. This is serious because this could be the Archduke Franz Ferdinand moment.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I think is happening. That's what I think it is.
Like, oh, shoot.
Or the Pearl Harbor. But I think this has a bigger effect on a lot of these people that they're expecting to react to this. I think attacking Israel probably has a bigger effect than Pearl Harbor ever did. Because, like, how long had Hawaii even been a state at that point? Like, not too terribly long.
Yeah, but when you get down to brass tacks, I mean, these people, how many people are going out here going nuts over all the people that were murdered with this vaccine?
Yeah.
Those same people, you know how many people were murdered with that thing and they know it happened? There's a whole lot of people that need the subject changed around here, whether it's Bibi Netanyahu or whether it's that moron we got in the White House. It doesn't matter, y'all. I mean, we are, good night, man. It's hard to believe that we're not a collapse. I mean, man, I don't even want to say the words. Okay, so I'm not going to say the words, but man, this ain't looking good. And I'm not saying it because Israel just got attacked, but these unifying alliances that exist between the Middle East, all throughout the world, and don't think for a minute that these powers that shouldn't be in these other countries, just like they did in World War I, say, hey, you know what, man? Oh, shoot, I don't know how I'm going to feed all these people. You know what? I got a great idea. Let's have a war.
Yeah.
They would actually thin them out. That's exactly, check out the work of Anthony Sutton, you know, another one of those intrepid truth tellers out there that's been buried in the dustbin of history. Go look at his work that he proved, I mean, without a doubt, everything you were told about World War I, lie. Everything you were told about Russia, lie. Everything you were told about Hitler, lie. Find out who really funded Hitler. Oh, it was America's Wall Street? How about that? The Bush family, Brown Brothers Harriman, all this history you don't know about because these teachers, these so-called teachers, history teachers, don't tell you about it.
They don't know about it.
No, that's true. They really don't.
Yeah, they don't really know about it.
No, they really don't. And then when you try to educate them on this, well, they already, you know, they got their master's degree, so they know everything.
Had a history teacher arguing with me about the moon landing. He's the history teacher. He should have known that was faked.
Well,
he should have known.
Well, just, you know what? As fake as that moon landing, the footage on that moon landing was, is about as, I can't say the footage here looks as fake, but this
the drama teacher knew it was fake.
The what?
The drama teacher. The drama teacher at school, he knew it was fake, oh, but the history teacher didn't.
All I know, folks, is that everything they're telling you is a doggone lie. Man, I just spent 20 minutes talking about this. But I didn't mean to. All right, coming up real soon, y'all. Mountain Readiness, October 20th through the 22nd. And I'm going to encourage a lot of folks to go to these things because you're going to need these skills. This stuff is ramping up. And depending on whom you listen to, you may not even recognize the country by the end of the year, the way this stuff is ramping up. And it's only going to go faster. There's a whole lot of hiding. You know, there's a big debt problem. Oh, the best way to handle all that is to have a war. Well, you better be prepared. And that's exactly what you're going to learn at things like Mountain Readiness and also Kentucky Sustainable Living. That's going to be going on October 28th and 29th. I'm going to be there at both of them. So I hope to see anybody there. Yeah, a lot of people were saying, hey, I thought you weren't going to this this last one. So I'm like, no, it was really an impromptu thing. I mean, it was really not planned at all. Okay, I better change the topic, change the subject. But before I do, I better get some spiritual help from Pastor Lon.
Hello, everyone. This is Pastor Lon. I got a question for you tonight and three verses of scripture. The question is this: what do you treasure the most in life? And the verses of scripture come from Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 through 21. Let's take them one at a time. Verse 19 says, lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal. You see, these treasures on earth are temporary possessions, and they can only bring you joy, satisfaction, and happiness for a short period of time. We need not allow the material possessions to become our main focus or primary focus and become a god unto us. You see, material things don't last forever. They can be eaten up by the moths, they can be deteriorated and rusted away, and they can also be stolen by other human beings. Don't choose riches over faithfulness to God. Verse 20, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt and where thieves do not break through nor steal. You see, we need to choose to focus on heavenly and spiritual things like witnessing for Christ and prayer and sharing the gospel and reading the Bible daily and doing good deeds because we've been born again, lending a helping hand, being a sounding board for somebody that needs someone to talk to, and encouraging someone physically and spiritually speaking as we are the hands and the feet of Jesus in this last day we're living in. And then, verse 21, for where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Whatever we choose to focus on is where our heart will be, and that's what we will become bound to. We should treasure the Lord Jesus Christ as our Lord. We should treasure witnessing as our tool, and we should treasure heaven as our eternal home.
Right on. There's Pastor Lon. Y'all check him out. Homesteading Pastor over there on YouTube. And, you know, that's a big deal right there. So many people driven by that stuff. And I got my faults, man, but that definitely ain't one of them. You know, I just know so many people that would sell their own mother for a price. Or, you know, they're just totally driven by this nonsense. And it just never made any sense to me. I don't care about those things. Never will. Never going to be driven by any of that garbage. I mean, honestly, the highlight of my every day is when I go out here and I move these animals and I see how happy they are when they get moved. So,
especially the sheep this morning, they were out there bouncing around.
Yeah. As it gets cooler. Yeah. They're going to start. They're like, oh wow, we're going to get new pasture. We're going to do all that stuff. Well, there's going to be two of them tomorrow that's singing a different story. So, yeah, a couple of them got to go in the freezer, and we'll talk about that maybe in the next podcast. I spent so much time talking about this other stuff. All right, so usually we used to have good news, bad news, or bad news, good news. Now it's just all good news, and boy, we kind of need it after what I just did. All right, so Blue City Chaos, Portland officials tell residents not to call 911 because the system is overloaded. That's out there in Portland, Oregon.
So where's the good news then?
That is the good news because it's the only thing that's going to wake these folks up.
Well,
is when they're realizing, they're like, okay, good night, man. We spend all this money in taxes. We're told to just be permissive to every bad, awful thing.
Yeah.
And these are the wages of that kind of sin. This is the wages. I mean, your 9/11, look, there is no way you're waking anybody up. In fact, I've talked to Pastor Lon about it. We've become so depraved. I mean, the depravity is so far off the chart that the only way to shake people out of this stupor that everybody seems to be in is stories like this. It's going to have to get bad, and it's going to have to get, sadly, it's going to have to get real bad before it starts to get better. I mean, that's just a fact when you hit this level of depravity. Also, check this out. New other good news story. So, yeah, that technically was good news. Biden administration finally admits there's a quote, acute and immediate need for a border wall as Democrat-run cities are overrun by illegals. Well, how about that?
Well, we got the wall. Is Mexico going to pay for it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know what? This is exactly, it's kind of like news. It's like, it's just like the last news. I mean, it really is. It's almost like the same exact thing where, you know what? It's just going to have to get bad, and hopefully it can recover. But I mean, there's enough of us out here that have sense. And that's part of the reason why I love going to these festivals and stuff like that. I mean, now there's other festivals I avoid, but like the ones coming up, these are the kinds of people, it just gives you a reset in your mind, knowing that there are legit, good, honest, straight up people that aren't buying any of this garbage.
Yeah.
So, so that's also, I mean, this is what it's going to take. All right. So we got a different species of good news now. So 10 small changes that can help you deal with burnout. Huh? You tell me that ain't absolutely necessary these days. All right, so I'm just going to lay them out here. So stop and breathe. Some of these I actually do myself, maybe not for the burnout reason, but I get frustrated sometimes. I get aggravated, and I'm making myself do certain types of meditation. But just like Psalm 1 says, in his law doth he meditate day and night. So I'm doing a fair piece of that as well. But yeah, stop and breathe. Deep breathing makes all the difference in the world. You can do something as simple as box breathing. You know, take 3 seconds to breathe in, hold it for 3 seconds, let it out for 3 seconds, wait 3 seconds. You know, you get the point. Then there's other kind of breathing that I do where you inhale 3 seconds and then fill your lungs as much as you can and then exhale for 6 seconds. Do that a few times, and believe it or not, you'll find yourself calming down. Everything kind of eases up a little bit. So that's just, and then of course there's Wim Hof breathing. In fact, I probably did all three of them today. Number two, accept that your balance is off. Well, first you got to know the last thing, it's the most impossible thing to do is to get my wife to stop and breathe even when I know, or at least historically it has been. Today marks one of those rare times where she actually listened to me and I said, look, hey, just stop what you're doing. I know you got a lot to do. You're up to your eyeballs. Please just stop for a minute and I want you to go breathe for a minute. Go meditate. And she actually took me up on it. Think of why you have to create better balance, okay? Yeah, I don't know what to do with that one. Identify the area in your life where imbalance is most pressing. Okay, that's going to be different for everybody out there. Find small, simple ways to replenish your energy. Believe it or not, it could be working out. It could be going for a walk. You ever find yourself really frustrated about something? If you just go out there and do some hard physical activity or something you think is hard for you, just 10 minutes, believe it or not, you'll feel a lot differently. But I always go back to, I mean, deep breathing is not my number one thing. Take regular 5-minute mindful breaks during a busy day. Now, I've started this new program where I'm taking 15 minutes 3 times a day. So that's 45 minutes where I'm making myself recenter and then do some of this very helpful meditations that I'm doing. Another one, ask for help. Believe it or not, that's why the Bible even says to share your burdens. Because when you do that and you have a person you can talk to and tell them, hey, this ain't going right, or I'm just not. Believe it or not, it is cathartic to tell somebody about it. And in fact, there are times like in this podcast, like today's a good example. Yeah, some people are going to think I went over the top regarding Israel. I can prove every word I said. If anybody wants to drop their programming long enough to listen to what I'm saying. But truly, that's cathartic to me because I'm sick and tired of the lies. I'm tired of everybody lying about everything. but it felt good to me to be able to tell all of you out there. Now, was I asking for help? Nope. But, well, I was at least getting it off my chest, and I guess that's what I'm going to add in here. Access how the conditions deteriorate to this degree. Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of important. That's one thing I learned about one of the meditations that I had to kind of drop, because, like I said, they're going to, you start pulling this Kundalini stuff, man, I'm dropping off, dude. I ain't about to open up no chakras, so, you know, so we can have some creepy crawlies rolling up in there. Homie ain't playing that. There's other meditations I can do.
Calling Tony. Got yeah, another story for
yeah,
him.
Yeah, no, we ain't doing any of that. I mean, there's other ways I know that I can get to the same place. And like I said, that's why Psalm 1 says, in his law doth he meditate day and night. So I'm spending more time doing that. But it is important for you to realize how it even got that bad. I mean, how did it get to this point? You know, why are you in this position where it has to get totally, you know, those people where it has to get totally, I used to be one of those people where it would get to the point where I blow up, where the pressure builds and builds and builds and builds. I think a lot of us are that way. And then you get to the point where it blows off. Well, that's why you got a pop-off valve on your water heater. You dig? So if it gets too hot, that valve goes before it just explodes. And that's exactly what I try to do. And look, in these days where money's worth less, things are weird, everything is a lie you see on TV. And I mean, everything is a lie if it's coming from a news source or a politician. And you're going to need those outlets. You're going to need those ways to break off and cut out some steam. It can be a number of other things. I mean, we're just bombarded on every single side. But I'm going to highly encourage everybody to go out there and definitely see about doing some kind of deep breathing. I'm telling you, it helps. Let's go to my man, Eric Sider.
Hey, Eric Sider here with your PimpCast tip of the day. Today's tip, limits to yield. System yield is the sum total of surplus energy produced by, stored, conserved, reused, or converted by the design. In a permaculture design, a yield is not only a singular product like an apple. Since we must produce a surplus to be sustainable, we must broaden our idea of what a yield is, and more importantly, think of the total energy produced by our systems. As Bill Mollison writes, yield is not a fixed sum in any design system. It is the measure of the comprehension, understanding, and ability of the designers and managers of that design. Defined this way, there is theoretically no limit to yield in our designs, as we can't possibly know all the ways to conserve, store, and save energy. There is always a way to improve an existing system to increase yield. The only limit is our own mind. This is one of the best reasons to have an outside perspective on your system. There is almost always an additional yield you haven't thought of. For example, a great use of the extra water from your septic leach field is to grow bamboo, as the shallow roots will not infiltrate the pipes. You can find me on YouTube and Instagram at Eric Sider, and if you're in need of permaculture t-shirts or remote permaculture consultation and design, identifying those missing yields perhaps, head over to ericsider.com.
All right, welcome back. Oh my goodness, if you haven't already, consider all the things going on in the world right now. We have, it's never been easier to tell people about the need for things like an EMP shield, preparedness food, all those things. You need to be putting them back. But if you need one, $50 off with promo code PERMA, P-E-R-M-A. But remember, the biggest threat to your homestead, your house, is always going to be lightning when it comes to these things. And nobody gives you a better deal than EMP shield when it comes to that. So if it gets past that surge protector, which is essentially what it is, guess what? They're going to cover you for 25 G's. So be sure to go check out EMP shield. Remember, promo code PERMA. All right, y'all, getting back. And I'm really excited about my next guest right now. I've been meaning to link up with him about a year ago, and he's here today. And if you haven't heard about him, you're going to want to know about him because he and his wife are doing some pretty astonishing things. He's done a lot of astonishing things, and he's one of those guys. He's a real deal Renaissance man. I don't know that there's too many things he wouldn't give it a shot or give a shot. And it's a real joy to have him on here. My man, Porterhouse, how you doing, bro?
Hey, good. Thanks for having me on, Billy. It's a pleasure.
All right. Thank you so much for being here. I was just at an event this last weekend as we were talking off camera, and somebody asked, hey, you know what, man? Why aren't there more people in this space that look like you? And I'm like, there are. You just maybe haven't heard of all of them. Maybe I've just got a bigger mouth. Maybe I'm just the one you came across. But there are a number of us out here doing this sort of thing. We'll come to that in a minute. But before we do, why don't you give everybody, like every good superhero, you got to have an origin story. So why don't you tell everybody about yours?
Well, my name's Eric, and have a YouTube channel, Porterhouse and Teal. And that channel essentially started about a year ago. Even though the channel existed and the name Porterhouse and Teal was based on my wife and I were hiking the Pacific Crest Trail, and that we got those trail names given to us. And that that channel at the time was essentially kind of a placeholder for all of our exploits on the trail. And so I managed to create some videos of the time that we spent there. And that's really what that channel had been up until that point. And my wife and I are both retired. We retired in 2015. I'm a retired firefighter, and she's a recreational therapist. And upon retiring, we decided, hey, you know what? We've been doing this homesteading thing for a while. Let's maybe step back. Let's get some of the keys off of our key ring. Let's have a little bit less responsibility around the homestead and get in our motorhome. And we decided to kind of go around the country and see some stuff. We were both empty nesters at the time. And so we thought that was a really good opportunity to do that. And we did that up until sometime around 2020, when things kind of all changed for a lot of us. And what we realized at that point is, hey, maybe we should start getting back and doing this homesteading thing again a little bit more as we had maybe done in the past. And so essentially we've been kind of on that path for since that time, and trying to sprinkle in some of the things that we like to do along the way, you know, recreationally and live our lives, and but also kind of get back to the roots that we had established earlier as homesteaders. That's kind of it in a brief nutshell where we're at this point in time.
Yeah, but you are not a Johnny come lately to this thing. I know we have a homesteading tsunami, as Joel Salatin calls it, and you've been at this from early on. So why don't you take us a little further back as far as your farming journey, and you know, how far back does it go?
Yeah, my folks moved us up out of the city. My dad's from Mississippi. He came from a family of 13. He was the oldest of 13, and he didn't even have a high school diploma. He wound up quitting school sometime around the eighth grade. He was about 13 years of age, and he wound up working alongside men to bring money home to the family in Mississippi. And I'm not exactly sure at what point he moved out to California. I think it was sometime around when he was about 18. He basically had odds with his father, basically kicked out of the house, right, as the oldest. And he wound up moving his family out to California. He moved to California and started a family. And, I've got three older siblings. I'm the youngest of four. So they had a more of a upbringing in the city, and it was a little harder adjustment for them. But I moved out to the farm that my folks bought at the age of five. And so it was really the lifestyle that I grew up around. I don't do well living in a city environment. I've always been a country boy. I've always been around, you know, being out and having space around myself on the farm. And it's something that I embraced, quite honestly, because there's so much of a separation between my siblings and me. My nearest sibling is like 7 years older than me. And my brothers, my two older brothers, are 10 and 11 years respectively. So I was almost like another generation. You know, I was kind of an accident, right? It was the kid that they didn't plan on having, but I came nonetheless. And so, I just grew up on the farm, and that's the lifestyle that I kind of embraced. As I said, my folks took an interest in raising cattle, got into raising Hereford cattle back around 1970 is when they first got their first cows. And then they kind of ramped things up and then figured out, you know, hey, maybe we're biting off a little more than we can chew. At one point, I think we had about 125 head, but it was mostly on leased ground because we didn't own much more than 13 acres at the homestead. But so it was a lot of traveling around and dealing with cows getting out and fixing fence and moving cows and just that whole thing. And my parents both work full time. So a lot of my responsibility was dealing with the livestock that we raised on the farm. So I didn't really get to play sports. I didn't do all the things that most normal kids did, but in a sense, I didn't feel like I was missing out on anything because of what I was gaining from my upbringing on the farm. It's something that's just a part of me. And I would say we probably had, about 40 head every year is what we'd raise. They were registered Herefords, and my dad would sell the bulls and stuff at the sales to the commercial men. And that was plenty because they both worked full time and it was kind of more or less a hobby. It wasn't like they were making a ton of money, but you know, he was, you know, living that lifestyle. And like I say, I'm better off for it.
Now, given that background, you made the transition. I mean, it sounds to me like you're like me, a country boy at heart. I mean, no matter where you find yourself, you're probably not going to do well in cities. You're not going to love really, 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 really big crowds, especially of people that you don't necessarily know. And you became a firefighter. So talk to me about that transition, because, I mean, typically if you're fighting fires, there's going to be some population density, at least somewhere nearby, I would think. How did you make that transition? What got you into that career?
It came from, you know, the local fire department used to have this like humongous siren that would go off. We lived about probably a mile and a half from the station. And back then they didn't have pagers or plectrons or any of that sort of stuff. It was the siren went off and then all the volunteers would, you know, show up at the fire hall and go get it, you know, go get an engine and respond to the emergency. And I used to hear that as a kid. And I had neighbors down the hill that were volunteer firefighters, and I could hear the siren going off and I could hear them peeling out and taking off and going. And that's just kind of something that had kind of got into me, like, hey, that's something I might want to do someday. It's exciting. And I just decided to pursue it as a volunteer firefighter. I started at age 16 and volunteered for a couple of years. And then I wound up getting a job with the agency that I wound up eventually retiring out with after 30 years. I worked for Cal Fire. They were California Department of Forestry at the time, but I got picked up seasonally and I worked as a seasonal firefighter for 4 years before I wound up getting permanent job and then accepting that. And that agency, we provide protection throughout the entire state in a multitude of different ways. It's not just a wildland agency, but that's how it started. It was more or less Department of Forestry, and it was the state side of what the Forest Service kind of provides, but it provides it to private lands. But it's a very vast and diverse department as far as what we have and, you know, what we respond in that. But that's what I joined for, because I liked the hills. I like being out in the forest and all of those sort of things. But yeah, that's kind of how I got into it.
Okay. Well, I definitely got a lesson there, because when people think firefighter, it's not typically, or at least it's what I would imagine, are people that are working in city environments. Clearly you were working in a more rural place. I remember actually my foray into firefighting was when I was in the Army. There was a Mendocino fire that we went out there, had to deal with. Got a little bit of experience doing some smoke jumping with rough terrain equipment and stuff like that. And sounds like you and I probably would have crossed paths maybe in the same breath out there. I don't know that I've ever talked to you about that. So you got that done. You did 30 years and then you hit the road. You're like, okay, empty nesters, let's go see some of this country. The world goes crazy. And as you know, it's gotten a little bit crazier. Okay. So what made you get back into the homesteading space and the farming space and what you're currently doing right now? And folks, you got to check out his YouTube channel. They're doing a lot of awesome stuff over there, and he's already up. I mean, you've been doing it consistently for what, about a year, and you're already well over 40,000. So go over there, subscribe, check him out. You're going to be glad you did. Very sober minded, wicked intelligent gentleman over there. And you want to go check him out. Let me kind of catch myself here a little bit. You came back 2020, things are getting silly. Did you get back into the farm space out of necessity, out of fear, or what brought you back?
Just, I think it was a recognition of the need to be doing what we had been doing before, which was raising our own food and being more self-reliant. I mean, it just became so clear, because everything's shut down. You've got supply chain issues. You've got all these things that are, you know, causing people to be disrupted in their way of life. And if you are living a way of life that you're providing more security and resources from yourself, you're generating that yourself and being more responsive in that way. That was just the reason why, because I realized that we need to get back to doing these things, because nobody else is going to do it for us. We can't continue to outsource certain things. And so that was the big impetus for that change of heart. But it really wasn't that big of a shift, because, you know, again, we'd been on this homestead and we bought this place in 2000. So we've been here, you know, 23 years, and it was just kind of turning the key back on. And I feel very fortunate, because a lot of people had that same epiphany. They had that same light bulb moment in 2020, and they were not in a position to do what we did. Mm-hmm. They didn't have the farm and the infrastructure and the know-how and all these things. And so a lot of people are kind of grasping, not necessarily at straws, but they're grasping at something. How can I get there too? And so that was partially the reason I decided to do something with the YouTube channel. It's like, you know, if we have something to share, we all have something to share. And I just thought, well, why not share what we're doing here on the farm? Not that it's any better than what anybody else is doing or anything. It's just another avenue that people can go to maybe pick up some tips and learn some things. And so that's kind of why we, you know, did what we did. And the channel was, again, born at that point.
Now I got to ask, I kind of move into the preparedness space a little bit here, because by the way, he and I met at the Self-Reliance Festival a couple of years ago, I think.
No, it was last year. It was last year.
Good night. And it's time moving that quickly.
Right.
Good night, man. Yeah, we met at the
last October.
I'll be dang, man. Where does time go? It just seems like a couple of years right now.
Yeah, man. Going fast.
I'm wondering where half of this month is. I'm like, things are, they definitely feel like they're being compressed. But okay, so we met about a year ago, mm-hmm. and it was out of Self-Reliance, which, by the way, y'all, is going to be happening, I think, this weekend coming up. So that's going to be in Camden, Tennessee at the Special Operations Equipment Place. So if you're interested or in the area, you might want to go check it out. Joel Salatin's going to be there, and a number of others as well. So yeah, that's where he and I met. And he was one of those guys, folks, I can't begin to tell you, you can't help but like him the moment you meet him. He's just a genuine, straight up, decent dude. And it doesn't take a good eye to see that. So, okay. So there we were at Self-Reliance Festival, but there you are in California. Now, the reason I'm asking this question is because, by and large, now I want to ask you real, because you're boots on the ground, you would clearly know, or at least have an opinion on it. Everybody you turn around here who has moved to at least this area, whether it's Eastern Tennessee, all of Tennessee, really, North Carolina, you name it, all up and down this side of the country, it's like, I would say 90% of them feel like they came from California now, and they'll give you the reasons why they feel like they have. Do you feel any need to evacuate like so many others, or do you feel like you're firmly put and this is where it ought to be, or is it not as bad as everybody's letting on?
I will tell you this, there's a lot of misperception that people have that have never been to California or don't know California, but there's a lot of good people in California. They look at Californians and, oh, they're from California or whatever, but there's a lot of good people just like them that live in California. I will say that politically, our state has been manipulated in a way that doesn't serve the people. And I think we're leading the charge on that with our politics. But I think that politic is spreading throughout the country as more and more places see that type of politics being pushed. So, yeah, I would say that as far as me leaving, as far as Rebecca and I uprooting and going somewhere else, we've discussed that. We've discussed it for many years. But it really boils down to a simple fact. And that fact is that family lives here. And it would be very difficult for us to uproot and go to another place and start our lives over in some place that's, I'm using my finger quotes now, freer. Because I really don't believe there are any free states. There's just some less restrictive than others.
Touche. Right? I couldn't have said it any better. And you're in Northern California, right?
Yeah, we're in the Northern Sacramento Valley.
It's a whole other country up there. It's not even the same state as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, we still have all the same problems though, you know, inflation and gas prices. You know, our gas prices in California right now are, I looked this up for one of my live streams last week. I think I was talking about this, but national average is like $3.80 or something like that. And then California's gas prices are $6.08.
Oh my goodness.
Right. So it's just one of those things that, like, it doesn't have to be that way, but it is. And there's so many other things about the state that doesn't have to be that way, but because of the people we have so-called running it, it is. And that's very unfortunate because I feel very strongly that there's no state in this United States that's probably more beautiful than maybe like a place like Alaska or something like that. I mean, it has so much to offer geographically. It is so diverse, from the mountains to the deserts to the oceans. It's just got it all. And you can't say that a lot about other places. You know, our weather is super temperate. We've got great weather. We've got all the things that people really want. But what we don't have is we have so-called leadership that has changed this place into a state where people want to leave. And that's sad. But the only reason that we're here is because of family. We're going to ride it out, man. You know, no matter how bad it gets, unless our family's going to roll, we're not going anywhere. And that's what it's all about. You know, yeah. I'm not going to leave our family when we have grandkids that live 3 miles away.
Yeah, I totally get that. And plus, we're going to need a detachment back there. Some real red-blooded people that are still left, because there's been this diaspora from California good night, like nothing I could have ever imagined. And you know, when you get down to brass tacks, I think you said it all right there. I don't know, pick your state. I mean, Texas, even some of the legislation going on in places like Tennessee, it's not as perfect. Like you said, it's less, it's like the ball starts rolling in, let's say, California and New York. And then it filters out. But like you said, it's like a slow rolling cancer, no matter how you look at it. So whether it's life in California or life in North Carolina, a lot of it really is what you make of it. And there's a lot of different ways. Like take your position. You're growing your food. I grow my food. So a lot of the inflation and the other nonsensical things that are going on right now, I'm largely unaffected by, because of that fact that we do grow the lion's share of what we have here. In fact, I'm going to process two animals tomorrow that are going to go in the freezer. So when you get down to brass tacks, I mean, that's one way to mitigate a lot of the nonsense. Now, political stuff, yeah, I won't stay on that too much, but coming up pretty soon, you and I are going to be sharing a stage at Kentucky Sustainable Living not too long from now. Now, that's quite a drive for you. that's quite a trek, and I'm looking forward to seeing you there. So what exactly are you going to be teaching?
I'm going to be teaching how to put in a fruit tree guild, a permaculture fruit tree guild. And it's going to be a kind of a smaller, intimate class, which I'm really looking forward to having time to spend with the students that are there, kind of a little bit more one-on-one, and talking about the benefits of gilding, talking about what is a guild, how to select your plants for the guild, and just some basic considerations as to, you know, how that can translate into growing more of your food, how it can expand into a food forest. But I think before I get to any of those things, I'd like to spend time with folks really impressing upon them the importance of soil building. Because I think a lot of people think that, you know, hey, a guild is just, you just throw a bunch of plants around a fruit tree or a nut tree and there you go. But everything that we do as it relates to trying to grow plants has to start with the soil. So I want to talk and have people really understand that so I can help them set themselves up for success. You know, I really want people to be able to come away from this class, much in the way that I did when I came away from the class that you taught, to be very inspired to go home and to start putting some of these practices into the, you know, on their own property. So that's going to be held on the 27th. It's going to be before the festival. There's going to be some classes that'll be held on the Friday before, and that's on the 27th. And yeah, it's a paid class. You can go on the Kentucky Sustainable Living website and take a look and see what is there to offer. But we'll spend time in the morning in the classroom. Lunch is going to be provided as cost of your entry to the class. And then in the afternoon, we're going to spend some time going out and actually getting some hands-on and planting some fruit tree guilds. So again, I'm pretty excited about it and looking forward to having the opportunity to come down there and share some knowledge.
Well, I'm looking forward to it myself. Hopefully I got time to, I'm going to be having a grandchild born about that same time. So hopefully I'm not bouncing out of there by the time that all goes down. But no, I'm looking forward to it too. And I got to be honest with you, you hit on something that I failed to really cover with any kind of good night. I mean, it's really the foundation of everything. I mean, it's Fukuoka 101, and that's soil. Mm-hmm. And that's something coming from a guy who looks under soil in microscopes and stuff, somebody like me. So yeah, I don't cover that enough. And sadly, I mean, see, this is exactly why we should cross-pollinate at these things, y'all. This is why you want to go to an event like this and why you want to hang out with my man Porterhouse, because truth of it is, I'm going to learn from him. I just learned right now. I'm like, okay, this is something I really don't teach all that much. Is I know a lot about it. I just don't teach it. And he's right. There are times in our videos that we've covered, okay, so let's say you're going to put in a food forest or orchard. Okay, well, what kind of soil do you have there? And I just kind of barely cover it. So you're giving me an idea to cover these things a little bit better. It's just in a YouTube video where I have to be short and concise. I just feel like it's tough for me to convey. Maybe it ought to be a series. It's tough for me to convey exactly what it ought to look like. For example, the soil in your pasture, which generally should be, if it's perfect, should be about a 50-50 mix of bacteria and fungi. But in your food forest, should be at least 10 to 1 fungi to bacteria. So, I mean, you don't have to necessarily start that way, but you can get that way. So I'm glad you're covering that. And that's something I'm going to, in some of the future classes I do, something I'm definitely going to have to look into. So folks, you're going to want to go check him out over there. One more thing, brother, I got to ask this because, and honestly, I hate even talking about it. But I get asked this a lot. There's a lot of emails about this, and they're wondering why so few people, brown people like you and I, are in this space. I have a great deal of reluctance in discussing it, but I think I shouldn't run away from it. I'd like to have your opinion on that, if you wouldn't mind covering it. I mean, people think that we're anomalies. There are other people out there. There's another wonderful guy in California, works in the LA area, I believe, and Ron Finley. Has done some extraordinary work out there, but maybe he's not a household name, or he used to be, but maybe not anymore. Mm-hmm. Do you have an opinion on that? Why more people of color aren't in this space, or why we don't see them?
Yeah, I think you know, it's a lot about what people have been exposed to. A lot of times people don't try something because they haven't been exposed to it, or their perception of what they see is something that they've been convinced they don't want to be. I.e., if you do that, if you're somebody who does that, you're stepping back in time, or you're, you know, trying to be white, or you're trying to, you know, you're an Uncle Tom, whatever people's perceptions are. I can't really get inside folks' head, but I do know that it's largely about your environment, because I have no doubt that had I been brought up in the city and lived my life there, I might have a much different outcome to where I am today. I can assure you that I would. It's because of what you see and what's your influence and all of those things. I've got cousins who, you know, when I see them occasionally or talk to them, oh, hey, what's so-and-so you know, doing that used to come up and ride horses that, you know, I had cousins that used to come up they ride horses and hang out all weekend with us and stuff, but they live down in San Francisco. And then you talk to them today and it's like, oh, you know, so-and-so's dead. They got shot. Oh, you know, he's in jail. No, he's in jail, you know, and it's just sad that those people have every opportunity, but their opportunity isn't as readily present to them. They can't see it because everything that they see around them is, you know, it's not good. But if they had different mentors, possibly, if they had a different upbringing, I think that you would see a lot more people in this space. But you really don't, because it's, you know, they've been conditioned to think, well, this is what I should be. I should be a rapper,
right?
Or I should be a basketball player, which in most cases, none of them people are going to be any of those things. There's only a select few that are going to rise to the top. And that's fine. You can try. But, you know, I think that it's just a conditional thing. I think people haven't given themselves the opportunity to step outside of the stereotype that's been created for them. And that's really the way I feel about it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's like this matrix that they've prepared for them, and really us too. It's just a matter of deciding whether or not you're going to stay chained to the bottom of Plato's cave. And, you know, as a person who started off in the city, well, I started off in the country, then the city, and then back to the country. But it's been, there's a stigma, at least on my end. I'll go ahead and address it as well. There's a stigma that I've come across in a lot of the places I've worked in the South. Where, like you said, it's like you went back in time. Oh, you're out there. What's next? You're going to be picking cotton or whatever. And I'm like, dude, you don't understand the sublime nature of what it is I do. I'm out here, working in this magnificent design science I call permaculture. And then some of them, you kind of pierce the veil a little bit, just a little bit. And then some of the others, you know, they may just kick and scratch and think, okay, I'm pretty comfortable here at the bottom of Plato's cave. I think I'm going to stay here a while. But yeah, I think it's extraordinary examples like yourself and a number of others out there that a lot of people haven't heard of. But you're finding out because this channel is growing and blowing up. So folks, go over there and check him out. Got a really good website as well. And check this out, y'all. He is a phenomenal artist. I don't know. You're going to have to go to the YouTube channel to go check this out. He sent this a while back. And I've been looking for a reason to show it off. And look at that. It's got my symbol on there right now. You'll have to go to the YouTube channel to check it out. I know most people. And there it is, the Greatest Pyrenees on the side of there. And thanks again, Eric, for doing all this stuff. I mean, you also have an internet business as well, right? At your website?
We've got a few things for sale. Need to kind of update that. I'm a little behind as far as what's being offered and everything. So I'm going to be kind of reworking that once things get, you know, a little bit slower in the winter time and have a little bit more indoor time, I suppose. And we'll be offering some more things here from the farm and different things for sale. But that was actually made from discarded wood. All of those products come from, there's a place that makes beehives locally. And they discard all this wood, and it's what I use to make my biochar. And then Rebecca likes me to make these birdhouses, and we kind of customizes them. And that's all her artwork. She just finds what the person's into and what, you know, they're kind of all about, and then just makes a personal customized piece like that. So I'm glad you're enjoying that. And
we love it. And there is no way on earth Michelle is going to let this thing go outside. I mean, I don't know if you guys meant it to be functional, but if you did, ain't going to happen because
it's a functional piece of art. You know, we made one for Tag and B too. And that's kind of the thing that Tag said. He says, there's no way this thing's going outside in Kansas in the winter. It's not going outside at all.
No. The first time some bird gets over here, I think I'll be running them out. I mean, I can't have it, but it's a beautiful piece of art, y'all. And
thank you.
You know, it's you do astonishing stuff, and he's a man of many, many, many talents. In fact, I seen him get chewed on by a couple of service dogs, man. Yeah, you got worked over at that one SOE event. Yeah, it was like I was watching visions of Brown versus Board of Education all over again. When he was in a dog suit, and they basically, it was these attack dogs, and, you know, he was allowed to get, you know, chewed on. What was that experience like?
Yeah, it was more than I had anticipated as far as the strength of those dogs. I hadn't anticipated that they would have been able to, like, grab a hold of me and, like, pull me off balance, but they certainly did that. And that's Joel Riles from Fortress Canine. He does a kind of a demonstration with his dogs and lets people get into the bite suit and kind of see what that was all about. But I mean, there's a lot of bite force going on there, man. If I didn't have that suit on, it'd have been not good for my arm.
Wow.
Yeah,
you don't want to get mixed up in that. But folks, you're going to have the opportunity to check him out at Kentucky Sustainable Living coming up here in a couple of weeks. And don't forget the VIP dinner that's going to be happening there. It's going to be to benefit Veterans for Child Rescue. And I bought two tickets myself. In fact, I think I may be going stag to this thing. So I may just be doing a giveaway for somebody out there. So we'll have to figure out how we're going to do that exactly. I'm definitely going to be going alone, and so forward to looking to seeing not only my man Porterhouse, but a number of others out there that you meet along the way. One cool thing about these events, everybody, is that it becomes something of almost like a homecoming or a reunion. And you come across a lot of these people that you got so much in common with, and you're not necessarily going to find them in your backyard, because many of us feel like we're outliers wherever we live. So it's always a joy to be there. So Eric, before we close, tell everybody where they can find you. Is it just YouTube and your website, and how would they get there? We'll leave a link down below, by the way.
Yeah, that's essentially where I can be found. It's at porterhouseandteal.com is the website. And we have the YouTube channel, Porterhouse and Teal. I'm also have a little presence over on Instagram and TikTok as well, both under Porterhouse and Teal. And, yeah, the email is porterhouseandteal@gmail.com. So all of the above, I can be reached in that way. But I would like to just say, kind of dovetail onto what you said, Billy, that as far as coming out to these types of festivals, you know, you can't really just allow yourself to sit on the sideline if you want to get a chance to meet people. You really have to get out there and make the effort. And I feel very strongly about that, because had I not made the effort to get out to Self-Reliance Festival and meet you and so many others, you know, I wouldn't have the relationships that I have today. And I would just be another person typing on my keyboard, hey, you know, whatever. And you would have no idea who I am or what I'm all about. And I think it says a lot about a person when they're willing to commit to go into these things, to actually meeting people. And so I hope to meet some folks at the Kentucky Sustainable Living Festival here coming up. And yeah, I can't say that strongly enough.
Oh, I'm sure.
I want to just thank you for having me on and getting the opportunity to chat. And we're going to do that here shortly again, I hope.
Yeah, absolutely. If we still have a planet left in spite of all the crazy things going on right now. Yeah, if we still have a planet, y'all, I'm not slowing down my life for anything right now. I'm going to drive on. There's a whole lot of prognosticators of doom out there telling you to, you know, batten down the hatches and all those things. And we're getting closer to where that might be an issue, but it's not there yet. And until that time, y'all, we're going to keep rocking on. Thank you so much for being here. And when we come back, y'all, we're going to go straight into Q&A.
Hey, Chef Keith Snow with HarvestEating.com with your PimpCast tip of the day. Now, in my podcast, the Harvest Eating Podcast, I speak a lot about being self-sufficient and learning to make as many things as possible. Items like mayonnaise, hot sauce, any type of thing that you use around the house, all kinds of condiments, pickles, learn how to make sauerkraut. These are all good things to do for sustainability. One thing that a lot of us don't think about is vinegar, and vinegar is very easy to make. I love to have apple cider vinegar at my house, but those of you that buy it, the real stuff, the kind with, you know, the mother in it, those are getting very expensive. So you can make your own. Take a half gallon glass canning jar. Make sure it's sanitized. And stuff it about halfway full of apple trimmings. You know, you can put in any apple trimmings. If you make an apple pie, that entire pile of trimmings, stuff it into the jar. If you make apple cider, all the pulp that comes out, stuff that into the jar. You'll add about 4 tablespoons of sugar, and then you will add some purified water. Shake the whole thing up really well to dissolve the sugar, and then put a little, not a tight-fitting lid, but a loose-fitting lid on top of it. And then about once a week, stir it up, and you're going to want to keep doing that for, you know, maybe 3 weeks, and then just let it sit for about 3 months. After that's happened, you will have your own completely natural and amazing apple cider vinegar. You just need to pour it through a strainer, and then you can store it in your pantry and use it just like any store-bought apple cider. It's that simple to make. So with that, I hope you guys give that a try. Also wanted to encourage you to check out harvesteating.com. There you'll find my coffees for sale. You can find my podcast and all my content. I appreciate you checking me out. And I want to say thanks to Perma Pastures Farm. Take care, everybody.
Hey, you want to know some coffee that's off the meat wagon?
Is
yeah. Your mom bought, I don't know if Chef Snow knows that or not, I guess your mom bought quite a bit of it. She's been making that stuff in the morning, y'all, and I'm telling you, that coffee is off the hook.
Yeah.
You got to get over there and try some of that stuff. I mean, I don't know how, man. I'm sitting here thinking, I'm telling her, I'm like, hey, things jump off, man, what are we going to drink? And I'm like, man, I don't know if we can store this stuff that long, you know? I mean, I know if you have beans that aren't roasted, I think you can keep them quite a while. But, man, boy, Chef Snow's got – he knows what time it is on this coffee, y'all. Go get some. I am dead serious. I don't get anything for it. I'm telling you, I don't need to. That coffee is absolutely excellent. So go check it out. Hey, by the way, if you need a Harvest Right freeze dryer, check out the link down below. And with that said, we're going to go straight into Q&A. Hey, Billy and William, haven't seen or heard any updates on the tree cuttings you potted to grow them. Basically, he's got a bunch of stuff going on himself. He says, let me know what you think of any suggestions you might have for multiplying other plants. Well, as far as those cuttings, all those suckers are in the ground. They're doing great. I guess he's talking about from a couple of years ago when we did that video where we grafted them, I'm guessing.
No, I think he's talking about the one we just did with the fig cuttings, the hazelnut cuttings, the ones we put in the plastic totes and stuff like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I wasn't going to. Oh, I see what you're talking about
now. Blueberry cuttings in the back.
Yeah, everything is doing fantastic. In fact, the fig cuttings, I'd say it's hard to tell on the hazelnuts because, I mean, you're not going to see a whole lot. Not yet. But I'm here to tell you. Okay, well, I'll just go ahead and tell you. We put them in 3 different kinds of media. One was sand mixed with coconut core, and the other was sand, coconut core, and some of our compost in there. And I'm going to tell you, the stuff with our compost in there, wow. I mean, it is night and day different. Everything. I mean, it's definitely the better method so far. I mean, I don't know what I'm going to find out down the road, but so far, everything seems to be going quite well.
Got one from Strider47 on the Fountain app. Eric Cider isn't like James Bond's Q. He's Billy Bond's Q. Also, regarding grounding, Mrs. Strider started grounding about the same time she started fasting like a girl, in reference to that book. It always improves her mood, especially if she can ground while reading the Bible. God created us as a spiritual hydroelectromechanical beings. It only makes sense that we need to discharge that interference regularly. Thanks for another great show. Hashtag BAM, hashtag tip a pimp.
Yeah, that's another thing as far as, you know, releasing some of that stress that we were given earlier. That's one thing that I've added to the regimen every day. Today, in fact, today I went and bought a grounded mattress cover top thing where you plug it into the wall. And believe me, as an electrician, I'll be checking that one out. Man, because, I mean, you got to absolutely make sure that some lunatic didn't get the hot and the neutral backwards, man. You wind up, next thing you know, you're Kentucky Fried laying in bed. But, I've taken it so seriously. I'm out here every single day, take my shoes off. And it's funny, when I'm doing my Bible memorization or my Bible study, I'm going through it, and I'm deep breathing, I'm grounding and I'm doing my Bible study all at the same time, earlier today. So I got my bare feet out on the grass and I'm like, okay, I'm going to keep this up. And now I'm going to go ahead and go all the way and do this mattress topper and see exactly how it works out. So look, man, there are so many healing modalities out there that will absolutely blow your mind and they never see the light of day. So I'm hoping and praying that, you know, it's little things like that that make all the difference in the world as far as removing some of that stress.
Yeah.
All right. Great episode. 3 years ago, I wouldn't believe what was said by your guest, but now it makes sense. By viewing the country, okay, as a corporate operation, I guess he's talking about that one. Man, we got a lot of feedback regarding that Oklahoma City show, and I can't cover it all.
I got a lot on here, too.
Okay, so I'll let you stick mostly to that, but y'all, I'm here to tell you that we're going to have to do like a three-part series. I am dead serious. There is that much. And even the most devastating information never even made it. We didn't even get that far. And we're going to have to cover some of that stuff. I'll outline it a little bit better. If you guys got questions, let me know.
Well, here's the next question. What's the why it was done? That's from Flyover Joe in regards to the Oklahoma City. He's asking why. Like, why was this done?
Yeah, there was a couple of reasons. There were a lot of, I would probably do better to let Chris answer that one. But the real truth of it is, part of it was multifaceted. Just like 9/11, it was multifaceted. They're going to get more bang for the buck than you realize. Number one, there was a lot of, as I understand it, Whitewater documents regarding the Clintons that were in there. They also needed Ruby Ridge, you had Waco, you had all those things going on, and you needed something else to make the militias look as if they're just, you know, half-baked the whole nine yards. There's a whole bunch of why in there. I mean, there really is. And that was one of the biggest smoking guns right there. So, we got one. I'm sorry.
This one here.
No, I got it. It says, love your YouTube videos. Will you be restocking bone sauce anytime soon? So it just occurred to me that we never, ever, ever talk about the products we sell on this show. We just added some more bone sauce recently.
And if you didn't know, we sell Comfrey, we sell rice knives, we sell bone sauce, we sell Comfrey salve, and I think we got a couple t-shirts left.
I'm not actually great in the business department on this thing here because I'm pretty passionate about what we're doing here. So if I fall a little short, you'll know the reasons why.
Got one from Feral Hippie. I discovered grounding about 5 years ago and started hiking barefoot shortly after. A barefoot walk in damp forest soil will release tension and help me get in a better mindset. I noticed this right away on a stressful day.
Huh. You know, there's that other part of it too, is that as you're walking through there, if you're walking in a good forest, you're probably getting a lot of great beneficial microbes.
Yeah.
And your feet are some of the, you know, very sensitive, a lot of nerve endings in there. Plus, you know, there's those little microorganisms out there that are probably doing you a lot of good in addition to grounding. So, probably great idea. Thank you so much. Love your work and hope one day to meet y'all. I love the book Scrap Setting. I've been wondering about your tree spacing in your food forest. Okay, so for us, it's all going to depend on your rootstock. And for us, we're using semi-dwarf in most cases. So, with the espalier, we could actually have somewhere probably, if we wanted, we could put, you know, just 6 feet between them. I like to go 12 because, remember, I'm putting a guild in there as well. And I'm going to be doing espalier, so for a lot of them. So that means I'm going to be aiming the footprint for these trees are going to be quite small. So with that understanding, there's a lot of other things I'd like to do. Plus, I can get more trees in there. So there's a whole lot, there's no definite spacing, but that's basically what I do.
Got one from Thiticus on the Fountain app. Still catching up on past episodes, so I'm on the fasting topic currently. I view all diets as pulling a combination of three levers: when you eat, what you eat, and how much you eat. When you start looking across all the fad diets, they typically pull one or two of these levers, some all three. Fasting is helpful and is adjusting all three at once, plus has many other benefits. Great to see you're getting results from it.
Yeah, you definitely need to catch up because I've done packed on a fair amount already. So I'm about to get back to it. I'm about to get back to fasting because I felt so much better when I was. you know, Pastor Lon and his wife have been doing a lot of it lately. And honestly, I just all the way around just felt better. So I'm going to start putting that back in. I was like, okay, well, jumped off the wagon, so to speak. But I was getting dangerously low, man. I got down to about 165. I usually walk around at about 200 pounds. So even Jack Spirko, he's like, dude, I don't think you ought to be walking around here at about 165. And probably pushed it a little bit too far. And now I'm letting the pendulum swing back the other way. But I'm getting to the point where I feel like, okay, yeah, I saw the benefits of it. Now I think I can just, because I don't know, everything seems to work better. You're not at all worried about when to eat. So I can do intermittent fasting, at least to some extent. But it's, even with the intermittent fasting, you still got to pay attention to what you're eating. You can't just go out there eating M&Ms all the time.
Got one from user 3369 on the Fountain app. Gents, despite the sobering content, I really appreciate the reminder. So many of the elites are sociopaths. To whatever degree you can, move your life outside their zone of influence.
Yeah, I think the operative words there, to whatever extent you can. Right. You know, when you get down to brass tacks with a lot of this stuff, man, we are dealing. The thing is, there was an interview that I just heard recently with Laura Logan. Laura Logan, intrepid reporter. Love to get her on the show one of these days. I'll probably have to see about doing that. And she was on with Seth Holthaus, man. She talked about things that these diabolical SOBs do that would make the hair on your... It was the most unbelievably difficult thing I think I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
What she talked about. And it's... I mean, it's choking me up just talking about... And these people do this. But most of us who are regular, everyday people just... can't even fathom the notion of somebody actually doing this evil, but they do. And they're wicked beyond words. They really are.
Yeah. Got one from the YouTube channel. Special K commented, these podcasts should be 18,000 views or more. Easy, Billy and Son. Keep up the most excellent works, dropping all kinds of pertinent information. Thanks. Blessings.
Well, thank you so much. But the powers that shouldn't be don't want this information, especially the way I started this program. You better believe this one ain't going to see the light of day. So this is why it's so important for everybody out there to, as best you can, try to spread it around. Tell everybody.
Last one from Gaffrig. Great interview. Best yet. Have him back soon. Keep safe. Talking about Chris Emery.
Yeah. Can't wait to have him back. A lot of people reaching out on that episode. So, tell everybody about it. Tell them what we're doing, y'all. We're getting in very, very consequential times. I said all this stuff. Look, I know that I'm going to lose certain people over this, and I really don't care, because the people that really need this information are getting it. Or you could be some single person, single mom, single grandmother, and there's a lot of those folks that listen to this. You don't know what to believe. You're hearing one thing, you're hearing another, and you got your peer groups, and they're telling you one thing or another. This is why I want people like Chris Emery on here to talk about this stuff, because everything you think you know about these things turns out to be a lie. And I can't think of a program that was more fitting in light of what's unfolding right now.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, that was good timing.
Yeah. False flag after false flag after false flag. And we're going to see more of it. And every major war, every major conflagration probably for the last 500 years has began with either a false flag or something that was manufactured. It's been a manufactured lie from one side down the other, and they keep getting away from it because we don't become more sophisticated. All right, hopefully this was a blessing to y'all. Until next time, stay alert.
Stay alive. Like a cell, they want to split up, but the center of the next is me.